Cinder, how are you this morning?
I'm doing great, Tom.
Hey,
how are you?
Good, good. A little hot, but a little better today than we were yesterday. And, of course, we still got flooding, which you and I will talk about in a couple of moments. You know, I don't know about you, but whenever you turn on the news in the morning, sometimes you question the order of the stories and what you consider important and what the news considers important. Do you ever?
Oh, sure. I take a look at it and think, you know, why are we spending so much time talking about this? There are other things that are more important. You know, for example, this morning, the future of Alex Acosta as the Secretary of Labor. I think what he did 10 years ago was just plain wrong, and he ought to go, but that's all we're talking about now. If you ask the average family in Southern Illinois what's on your mind, I don't think that would be number one or in the top 100 for that matter. If you said to them, you're concerned about the cost of prescription drugs, they'd say, yeah, what are you going to do about it? Now you get into the world where we're actually responding to the people who send us to Washington by doing something to improve their lives.
And what's interesting is because, you know, I think the same thing, and here's the one that I've got on my mind, and I know it's on a lot of senators' minds right now, and that is this nation's debt. 25% growth in the last 2 years in the debt itself. We've got the Health and Human Services Department spending $100 billion a month, and the thought that we're going to hit our debt ceiling early, and the senators are talking a lot about this, including yourself. This, to me, is one of the most important stories that we have right now in this country's debt.
You bet it is. And, you know, there's plenty of blame to go around, both political parties, but we came through with a tax cut, a massive tax cut that was geared toward people in higher income categories at a time when it just added $1 trillion or more to our deficit. Who's going to pay for that tax cut? It isn't going to be the wealthy people in the future. It's going to be our kids. They're going to be burdened with this debt. Now, to me, that was an irresponsible way to approach it. I think it should have been a much more modest tax cut, and it should have been geared toward working families. They're the ones who are struggling paycheck to paycheck, and I think they would get the money, they'd spend it, we know they would, right into the economy and get us moving forward as a nation, and that's the kind of tax cut that makes sense. The one we passed was too big and unfortunately helped the wrong people.
And this debt ceiling question is going to be one that's pressing. As you talked about prescription drugs, and while I was writing notes for today's show, I had the TV on and I looked up, and there it was, a TV ad for a drug with the prices on it.
I saw it last night too. Do you remember the drug?
It was a blood thinner drug, and the price out was $444 a month without insurance and $48 a month with most insurance. I wrote that down, and I think that's the first one I've ever seen.
That's the first one I've ever seen, too, and it just happened within the last 2 weeks. I put that bill in, introduced it with Chuck Grassley, Republican of Iowa, last year. We passed it in the Senate. Pharma, the pharmaceutical companies, killed it over in the House. Then I get a call from the Trump administration. They said, Durbin, big surprise, the president likes your idea. He wants to do this. They put in a rule. The rule was overturned by the court this last week. But what you saw and I saw is an indication the pharmaceutical companies realize that it's time for them to be a lot more honest with us about what these things cost. And $400 a month is a big hit for working families. But, you know, there are some that are $5,000 a month.
Yes.
Humira's $5,000 a month. You know, and you look at that and you think to yourself, we ought to know that before we look at this ad and think this is a great idea.
Have you gotten any traction on the issue of insulin prices while we're on this subject?
Boy, I tell you, I'm glad you brought it up. Yesterday, four kids come to see me. One of them was from Jerseyville and three from the Chicago area. Type 1 diabetes, cutest kids on earth, bravest kids on earth, going through this daily routine of making sure they have enough insulin to stay alive. They broke down. This little girl from up around Chicago area broke down in tears when she said, my mom and dad can't take us on vacation like our other relatives, and we can't have a summer home we rent because they've got to spend thousands of dollars on my insulin every year. And I turned to her mom and said, well, what does it cost you? She said, my health insurance covers it, but I've got to pay $8,000 in copay before they pay the first penny. So we spend $8,000 the first 3 months of the year for her insulin before we get health insurance coverage. That's ridiculous, Tom. Insulin was discovered 100 years ago. The patent was surrendered. It's time that this life and death drug doesn't have prices that drive people to the point where they can't even afford to buy it to stay alive.
All right. And I said, know many people in our area that I've met personally that are reducing their dose at the risk of their own health to be able to continue to move forward.
All right. Dangerous.
You know, when it comes to this issue, another one that you've been in, I don't know if you saw this, but one has already responded. Chicago White Sox field, you've been calling for the extension of the netting for Major League Baseball. I guess Chicago's the first to extend it all the way to the foul pole.
They sure did. The Washington Nationals, Chicago White Sox first, Washington Nationals second. Dodgers are getting ready to do the same thing. And here's what it boils down to. I love baseball. I love sitting out at the park. But as attentive and as focused as I might be, that 100-mile-an-hour foul ball line drive coming at me or my little grandson, I can't react fast enough. I'm sorry. And most people can't. And so you're vulnerable sitting out there. And it ends up 1,400 people a year get seriously injured by being hit in the stands. So they did a survey, and they asked a lot of fans. I don't know exactly where it was taking place. I think it was nationally, and they said to them, what about a net to protect it? Tom, it was 3-1 favor of it. People said, sure, protect us. We don't want to get hurt at the ballpark. And a little bit of obstruction. You know, if you've been to a ballpark, the most expensive seats have a net in front of them. Right. And nobody complains about it because they want to be safe. And that should be the first thing we guarantee to baseball fans.
The citizenship question on the census, and this has, of course, been a highly contentious court, of course, level issue. You were recently quoted at one, I think it was a TV or radio station, saying this was a ploy. But here's the question, Senator. Isn't the question about citizenship on the census, isn't it more about representation? When it gets right down to it, the very basis for census is representation. So shouldn't you know how many citizens based on that alone?
When it comes to representation, for example, how many people it takes to have a congressional district, we felt that personally over the years. We lost a congressional district that used to be exclusively Southern Illinois, as fewer and fewer districts are in our state. But when they calculate the number of people in the district, they do not limit it to citizens. It's everybody living in the district. The Constitution makes that clear. It's people who are non-voters. They're counted in as well. That's been the case since the Constitution was written. So when the president says, well, we need to know how many citizens are there to make up a congressional district, not true, Mr. President. Constitution's very clear. That's not the case. What's boiled down to is pretty obvious. There are people, particularly those in mixed families that have perhaps one person in the household who's undocumented and everyone else a citizen. They're worried about turning over information to the government, whether they're going to have somebody deported out of their household. If it's a bad person, they should be deported. But if it's not, for goodness sakes, why are we harassing these folks, many of whom lived here for years, work hard, pay taxes, and should be given a chance?
Immigration compromise. You and Lindsey Graham have been working on it. Any hope for because we keep talking about it, but we never get across the finish line.
It takes a Democrat and a Republican and the White House. And I'm talking to Lindsey. I talked to him yesterday. We may have the only bipartisan conversation going on Capitol Hill. And he and I think we could reach some agreement on this. We've worked together for years. And I think we can reach some agreement, but we've got to have some buy-in from the president. So I've reached out to his son-in-law, Jared Kushner, whom I've come to know over the last couple of years. And we're at least in conversation about it. But there ought to be a way to say the basics. We need border security. This senator wants to know who's coming into this country and what they're bringing. In a time of terrorism and drug epidemics, we should have nothing less. Secondly, I don't want anybody dangerous coming into this country, not knowingly. I want to stop them at the border, and if they're dangerous here, I want to throw them out. Third bottom line is we've got to make sure that we have a system that makes sense and accept the obvious. We cannot allow every person in the world who wants to come to the United States to come across our border. Just can't do it. We need to do it in an orderly way, make immigration part of our future in a thoughtful way that doesn't hurt American workers. So I think when we start with those basics, Democrats and Republicans generally say, okay, now where do we go next? That's when the conversation starts.
I think you wrote a letter in support of Governor J.B. Pritzker seeking help for flooding and seeking financial help out of D.C. when it comes to these emergency funds. Didn't you? I think you wrote a co-letter in support, didn't
I did.
You?
I did with Tammy Duckworth, my colleague in the Senate. We got hit hard. And the thing about the flood this year that was different than other years, it wasn't the biggest, but it was one of the longest. It just didn't go away. The duration of the thing really just kind of beat up all the communities along the Illinois and the Mississippi, the Ohio not as much this year. The unfortunate thing is a state with our population, around 13 million, usually doesn't qualify for much federal assistance. We keep trying and trying. trying to change the formula to help our state. But boy, there have been a lot of people pitching in, and I want to salute the families and community leaders and first responders who came on the scene and filled those sandbags and worked to help the people who were hurt.
Senator Duckworth will be in Carbondale this weekend.
Great. Yeah. She's a good one.
All right. Senator, appreciate your time as always. Senator Rick Durbin. Thank you, Senator Durbin.